With the bottom of Sadi Dalet Amubet, we're going to start with seven lines from the bottom, the last word on the line, Hanhu. Hanhu are these, Elu. Hanhu Trei Shtarei De'atu L'Kamed Rav Yosef. There were two shtarot that came before him. Chai Havakatu B'Chamisha B'Nisan, V'Chai Havakatu B'Nisan Stam. Okay, he had two shtarot about the same property. Okay, like a guy sold his property on the 1st of Nisan, on the 5th of Nisan to one guy, and in Nisan to another guy. So now obviously we don't know which came first because it just says Nisan. Katubei b'Nisan stama. Uchma Rav Yosef lahuda chamisha b'Nisan b'nechasim. Rav Yosef said, the guy who it says on the 5th of Nisan, he gets the nechasim. Okay, why? Because he has a clear date, right? Whereas the guy who just says Nisan could be later, right? It's obviously going to go in the hands, we saw this before, of the guy who has it first, who had the property first.
Then it's Chatima instead of Nisir.
Would you have to say it's Chatima here? Because...
Well, they're arguing about the same
land. Well, we don't have them. Right, they're arguing about the same land. We don't know when the Masira was, really.
It doesn't say.
Right, okay. Right, it doesn't say. So Amar Le, right, all we have here is the Chatima. So all we have is a shtar.
Okay.
So now the question, Amar Le'idach, Ba'ana Afsid. The other guy says, so now I'm totally out of my property? You know, just because my shtar said Nisan? Amar Le'at, Yedcha La'tachtona, Ema Bar Nisanat. You know, you're the underdog, basically. Yedcha La'tachtona. You can't prove yourself because the other guy could say, maybe we're on the 29th of Nisan. So Amar Leh, v'nichtov limar, tir from me'ir ve'elach. You should say at least that I can now, and others, what happened? I put out money. So I'm owed money back. Let's say it was the 29th of Nisan. That's the worst case scenario. So basically, I should be allowed to go demand land, right? I'm out of this piece of land, I understand. But you should at least allow me to go demand the land that I paid the money for, in other words, a different plot of land, from someone who sold property to, right, the owner, the guy I bought from the 1st of Iyar or not. Right. At least let me do that, because yes, it's true, you won't give me this piece of land because there's another guy fighting for it and he has better rights, but I at least paid the money, I should be allowed to get the land. So some land from him. So, and if you're going to say, worst case, 29th of Nisan, so fine. So from the 1st of Iyar, let me, anything you sell from the 1st of Iyar, I don't know why he doesn't say the 29th of Nisan, really. But anyway, from the 1st of Iyar, I should be allowed to collect. So Amar Li, Yachle Lememralach, At Barchav B'Nisanat. But though, if you go to collect your field from some other buyer, the buyer will say to you, and it's someone who bought a Sadeh from the same guy, later, from the 1st of Iyar, he'll say to you, you know what, maybe you're the 1st of Nisan, in which case, you don't have a lien on my property because you should go take it up with the other guy who's in the 5th of Nisan and take that piece of property. You don't own this property. Understand? You can't have a lien on this property because that property is yours. So, what they say in Hebrew, kereach mikan u'mikan, right? And he can't get this and he can't get that, okay?
But if he has a ruling from the Beit Din that he says that he doesn't have property, isn't it going to go through?
Well, no, because the Beit Din says you don't have the property misafek. Because of a safek, we can't take it out of it. We're going to give it to the other guy. But there's still a possibility. How does it work in court? You can make a claim, right? So they can make a claim. Well, maybe you were from the 1st of Nisan, in which case, go take it up with that guy, even though you can't take it up with that guy because the Beit Din won't agree with you. But basically, since you can go both ways, sorry, but you're stuck. So my takante. So what could he do to resolve this issue? Nichtivu harsha'a lahadade. He can go back to buyer number one and say, let's write up a shtar, okay? That it's almost like a partnership agreement, right? That like when I bought this house, we're attached to the other house and we had to make a partnership agreement. The lawyer said, you know, to say this part of the plot is mine and this part of the plot is yours. So let's make a partnership agreement that this property, that the property you took is yours. And if not, you know, then I get your property. Let me just look in Rashi. Rashi explained it well. Yivakesh me'et chaviro bar chamisha b'nisan, v'yimsur lo shtaro v'yichtov lo harsha'a, alav litrof l'kuchot. In other words, this is the way they're going to say it. Let me just explain it simply. They're saying that let's make a deal together. We'll write up a document that says basically, you can demand, the second guy, right, who had the just benisan, can demand from Likuchot either In other words, he has, I explained it wrong in the beginning, it's not like that, it's not a partnership agreement. It's more, he's giving him power of attorney. That when the guy goes to take from the Lekuchot, one of them is deserving of taking from someone else. Either the 25th of Nisan, either the 5th of Nisan, or the guy who just says B'Nisan. Because either which way, one of them deserves the first property, and then one of them can demand it from the other.
Can't then the other person go get his money from someplace? Like, you just get a vicious cycle, can't you?
Well, okay, we'll get to that in a minute. But let's just deal with this at first. So now, what do you have? When the guy who just says B'Nisan goes to take the money from the Lekucha, and they say to him, well, maybe you're from the 1st of Nisan, he says, that's fine. I have a power of attorney from the 5th of Nisan guy, and I'm going to take it on his behalf. And that's what he's basically doing. Okay? Now, why would it work cyclically in this case? We're going to see the next case, we're going to see the mission is cyclical. But here, no, then the Lekuchot, the guy who they took the land from, he bought land. Well, it depends. We don't know. We don't know. Yeah, but we don't know if he bought it with achrayut or not with achrayut. In other words, if he bought it with achrayut, then he could go back to the original owner and say, give me something else. But he can only demand it from someone who bought after him. Right? He can't demand it from these guys.
Right, no, because, I know that.
Oh, so he can go demand it from someone else. Cycle, right, yes. Then. Now we're going to see a real vicious cycle. Okay, you ready?
Okay.
New Mishnah. Mi shehayana soy shtei nashim. Okay, I made a diagram so that you can hopefully visualize it a little better. He's married to two wives. Now remember, each wife can demand the ketubah from his fields, right? She gets it from karka. So here's the field that they're both claiming. Okay, now, what happens? Machar et sadeu. He sells this field. Now remember, she can demand it from the chasim shuabadim, right? The property that he sold to someone. Bikatvari shonana. Who gets first priority? The first wife. We learned this yesterday, right? The first wife gets priority. But the first wife wrote to the lokeach, din udvarim ein li'imcha. I promise I won't collect your land. She told the lokeach, okay, we're going to see why some women say this and what do they mean and do we really take this seriously or not. But right now we're going to assume we take it seriously. So she says, I promise you I will not come after you for this land. So now what happens? The guy dies. They go to demand the ketubah. The first wife can't take it from him, right? Hashnia motzi'a me'alokeach. But the second one can, because the second one never made an agreement with him. So the second one goes to demand it from the first. That's the first stage, okay, number one, right? The shnia gets it from the lokeach. But now, the first one is still deserving of her ketubah. What can she do? Rishona min hashnia. She can take the land from the second one.
Right.
Because she has, exactly, it's no longer the lokeach. So it's now the wives, she could take it from the wife and say, hey, I get first priority before you. But now that she took the land that was originally belonging to the lokeach can say, lokeach min harishona. He can demand it now from the first wife because she said, I won't take this property from you. And in the end, his property ended up in her hands. He comes to her, he says, look, you wrote me a shtar, you won't take my property. So I want my property back. Exactly as Ruth said before, this is going to become cyclical. So now, the lokeach takes it from the Rishona, and now what happens? The Shnia takes it from the lokeach. V'chozeret chalila. Okay, this keeps going on and on and on. Ad she'asu pshara b'nehem. Okay, they have to make some sort of an agreement here because they each have equal parts to the land. So, you know, the best pshara obviously would be to somehow split it or compensate each other somehow. Okay, now, obviously, the Mefreshim explained that it doesn't mean that each one goes to court and demands it from the other and keeps going on and on and on. Obviously, the point is, since this could happen, we basically, from the beginning, just do a pshara between them because there's no choice. Okay? V'chein balcho, v'chein isha balatcho. Okay, we'll get to that in the Gemara, why they bring this. But anyway, this it would be the same thing, right? If it wasn't women in a ketubah, it would be balcho or balatcho. Either which way, it would be the same thing. Okay. Now, like I said, we have to now deal with, the Gemara is going to try to deal with what this statement of Dinu Dvarim Ein Li'imcha, and is it really, do we take her seriously when she says it right? The Mishnah seems to imply we take her very seriously. We assume she meant it.
We already saw this in the past where they didn't want to work the field, or they didn't want to have the labor, so they said, I want nothing to do with
it. Right. They didn't want the responsibility of the field. Okay, here we're going to see that maybe she has some ulterior motive for doing it. And maybe she doesn't really mean what she says. Okay, we've seen before cases where people say something, and then the Gemara is going to say, oh, well, it can't possibly be that they meant it. They must have had some ulterior motive for saying it, in which case we don't take them seriously when they say this. And then we're going to say, well, okay, I'm just giving you the preface of what's going to happen. Our Mishnah clearly takes her seriously. But a different place, it's going to say we don't take her seriously when she says it, so that we're going to have to reconcile the problem.
through this claim, though, is she forfeiting her ketubah?
So she's not, because in the end, she can get it from the second wife.
Why wouldn't it be? Like, what? So what would...
Because she can demand her ketubah, maybe there's other property. In the end, there's nothing... Right. Now, it happens here, there is no other karka.
Right.
So, right. We're going to see a case soon where she forfeits her ketubah entirely. Okay? We're going to see, because... Right. Okay? So hold off. But here's clearly she didn't, because she has rights to get it from the second woman. She said to the lokach, I don't have anything to do with you, but since the lokach's property is going to be given to somebody else, then she can demand it from that person, which will be the second wife. Okay. Katvale my have. Just because she wrote dinu dvarim elimcha, who cares? That shouldn't work. Vahatanya, we have a braita. Haomer lechaveiro dinu dvarim eli al sadezo. Okay, this is what we saw. This is what, Donna, you were quoting. Okay, if he says, I don't want to have anything to do with this, this obviously means either he said this, or he said that, right? My hands are taken away from this property. Lo amar klum, okay? It doesn't mean anything. We don't take him seriously, okay? So it was the sugyan pegim. So the answer, no, hacha b'mayas kinam b'shekanu miyado, when they did a kinyan. Okay, it wasn't just he said it or he wrote it, but, or she said it in this case, it's that she did a kinyan with it, meaning she showed she was serious. So now they say, what do you mean though? V'chikanu miyada, my have. That still shouldn't work. Tema, she could say, nachat ruach hasiti leba'ali. I was trying to make my husband happy. Why was she trying to make her husband happy? Because think about the situation. Here comes a guy, he wants to buy property from the husband. He knows that the property is mishuabad to the guy's wife. He doesn't want to buy the property because his wife's going to, right, take it from him ultimately. So his wife says, don't worry, I won't take your property. And she's doing it, right, to make her husband happy so that her husband gets his property sold for a reasonable price. Okay? But she obviously didn't really mean, I'm not going to demand my ketubah from there. Obviously, she wanted her ketubah. So we don't take her seriously. Okay? So now, how do we know that this works, that we buy this, that we accept this claim of nachat ruasiti lebaali, and therefore, if she says dinu dvarim and she does a kinyan, it's lo klum, okay? Which, again, would go against our Mishnah. And now we're going to bring a different Mishnah that says that basically is going to go against our Mishnah and say, if a woman says that, we think nacha ruach. Okay, what's the case here? Milo tznan, doesn't it say in the Mishnah? Okay, there's a Mishnah in Gittin, nun hamubet. Lakach min ha'ish, v'chazar v'lakach min ha'isha, mekho batel. If he buys property from a man, and then he buys the rights to it off the woman. In other words, he basically buys out the woman's lien on the property. Okay? Mikho batel. It doesn't work. It's not a good sale. Okay? Right. So Rashi says here, mikho batel mashma legamre. It sounds like bichlal, it's not a good sale at all. Afilu b'chayei haba'al. Okay? And in Baba Batra, they say, Rashi says here, mukmina la be'achat me'otan shalosh sadot, o yichdala l'ktubata. In other words, what generally happened was a man set aside and said, these fields are going to be for your ketubah. So it's talking specifically about one of the fields that was designated for her ketubah, and therefore the husband can't actually sell the property, or it could be her nichse melug, they say. In other words, it's unclear exactly what the situation is, but it's basically talking about property that she has some sort of a real claim to, not just regular, you know, nechasim of the husband, and therefore the wife has to agree with it, basically. Okay? And because the wife didn't agree with it, I'm sorry, she did agree with it, but we don't really take her seriously that she agreed with it. And therefore, the mekach is batel. What do we learn from this Mishnah? Why would the mekach be batel if she agreed with it? Alma yechola yishetomar nacharua chasiti lebaali. Okay? So again, our Mishnah seems to say, we don't accept this claim where the woman would say, nachat ruach hasiti lebaali. We assume if she was mevater on the land, she was mevater on the land. And in this case, we see in the Mishnah Gittin that she's not mevater on the land. Okay? That even if she says it, she could claim, I was just doing it to make my husband happy. Okay? So now, if you look at the chart, we're going to see three different ways to understand the difference between them. And in doing so, the first way, we're going to quote a new braita with a new machloket. We're going to try to set it up. Then we're going to kind of reject it, but we're going to use these opinions in this braita. Amar Rabbi Zera, Amar Rav Chista. Lo kashya, hat Rabbi Meir, hat Rabbi Yehuda. Ah, don't worry. One Mishnah goes like Rabbi Meir, one Mishnah goes like Rabbi Yehuda. D'Tanya, it says in a Braita, Katav LaRishon V'lo Katav LaRishon V'lo Chatmalo. He writes he sells his field to one guy and the wife doesn't sign it. Okay? Then L'Sheni, he sells a different plot to another guy V'chatmalo, and the wife signs on it. Okay? Ibda ktubata, divrei Rabbi Meir. Now it goes to what you were saying, Shoshana. She loses rights to her ktuba. Why? Okay, so now you have to understand some basic facts. When someone demands, here, I made a little picture here also, a diagram at the bottom of the page. She has her ktuba, right? Her rights to that ktuba are for any fields that the husband has, right? From that moment, right? That he owns at the moment of the ktuba. If he sells one, if he still has another field, okay, in this case he had two fields. So we sold the first one. He still had another field. Therefore, the guy who bought it from him knew that he had other fields to pay the wife, and he knew, therefore, when there's a case where you buy a field of Nechasim Meshu'abadim, when there's still Nechasim B'nei Chorin, free property, still available, of the amount of the loan is out for, or the ketubah is for, in our case, then even if later he sells that property, okay, the woman or the Baal Chov or whatever it might be can't demand it from the first guy. Because when the first guy bought it, there was still money in the guy's estate, even if he could demand it from the later property. But let's say the property doesn't exist anymore, right? Like, I don't know, he doesn't have the money anymore, they still can't demand it. If at the time he bought the property, the Nechasim, there was enough money to pay for her thing. We're going to see a few different situations, but that's the basic concept. There were Nechasim B'nei Chorin. Okay, we'll see this inside also. He can't, right, the Baal Chov, or the woman can't demand it from that first field. So what happened in this case? He sold the field to the first guy, okay? V'lo chatmalo. The woman didn't sign off saying, I won't take this property from you, okay? So basically, she still could have rights to that property, except for the fact that there's another issue here, which is the husband had another sadeh. So really, she can't, okay? She can't demand from guy number one because she's supposed to get it from the second field. But then what happened? La Sheni, he sells it to a second guy, okay? V'chatmalo. He sells the second field to a second guy, and she signs off on it. She says, I agree with this sale. It's fine. I'm giving up my rights to this field. So according to Rabbi Meir, Ibda ktubata, because she was supposed to get it from the second field. It's not the first guy's problem that she signed off on the second field. It's her problem, right? That was her ketubah, basically, and she signed off on her ketubah. So in this case, she doesn't get a ketubah. That's Rabbi Meir. Now, what would that match? Which opinion? That would match our Mishnah that shows that her signing off, her saying, Dinu Dvarim Ein Limcha, would work. Serious. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Yecholai Shetomar Nacharua Chasiti Lebaali, Atem Malachem Alai. Okay? She could say, I did it. I didn't really mean to sign on that second one. I was just trying to make my husband happy. Okay? And therefore, leave me alone. Okay? That's Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. So now, that would match the Mishnah in Gittin. Okay? That's a very good answer, right? Two Mishnayot, they don't agree with each other, right? Very good. What's the problem? Now, here you get into a whole question about when Rebbe wrote the Mishnah, okay, when he edited the Mishnah, what was his intent? Okay? So the Gemara says here, for Rebbe, Stam Lam Hacha Kirabi Meir, Stam Lam Hacha Kirabi Yehuda, when Rebbe wrote a Stam Mishnah, right, without bringing in a machloket, it doesn't make sense that in one place he would side with one side, and in the other place he would side with another side. Now this is a good academic question. Did Rebbe really try to make a consistent, was his approach to be consistent in his book, you know, that everything always matched up? Or not? Or was he just collecting opinions and, you know, maybe that wasn't his intent. Remember, he edited. He didn't write. He edited and he decided what went in and what didn't write. It's unclear. Anyway, the Gemara seems to have a clear agenda here. It must be that he's consistent and therefore we're rejecting this opinion. It can't be that a Stam Mishnah here and a Stam Mishnah there. Right? If it were a Mishnah of Braita, no problem. The Braita didn't make it into the Mishnah. But since it made it into the Mishnah, the Gemara says that doesn't make any sense.
Especially because don't we say all Stam Mishnahs are Rabbi Meir?
We do generally say Stam Mishnahs Rabbi Meir, but again, every rule, like not every Stam Mishnah really is Rabbi Meir. It's definitely true as a general rule. Okay, but like everything, rules are meant, rules are broken all the time, and Here, likewise, it's possible. Okay.
A question from Rabbi Yehuda. Does she claim the first guy's land or the second guy's land?
She claims the second guy's land.
Right.
Because she says, I never signed off on it, so I'm collecting it from you. Because she can't collect the first guy because when the first guy bought the land, there was other sadeh for her to collect from.
Okay.
And therefore, she can never collect from him.
Effective.
She can't collect from lokach number one at all, from the first field. She can only collect from the second field.
Right.
Okay? Now, so Amar Rav Papa, so now, again, why would you say that in one case she could say, Naharua Hasiti the Baalin, and in the other case she can't, right? We can't claim that. So Rav Papa has a very good answer. Okay, again, it's in Kimta to the Mishnah, right? Like we've seen before. Amar Rav Papa, Bigrusha, Bidivre HaKol. Our Mishnah is talking about an Isha Grusha. Okay? It's talking about a woman who is divorced. Now, obviously, a woman who's divorced, after she's divorced, the husband sells the field, and she says to the lokach, don't worry, I won't collect this field from you, I'm not interested. Obviously, she wasn't doing it to appease her husband, she wasn't married anymore. Okay? And that's why it works. That's why she can't have the claim, I was doing it to make my husband happy, because her husband wasn't married to her anymore. We can assume, once they're divorced, she has no interest in doing anything nice for her husband. Rav Ashi Amar, Kulat Rabbi Meir Hi. Okay? It's all Rabbi Meir. But what's the difference? Now we're going to distinguish between the cases. Now here it's going to get, again, we're going to have to do an akimta ultimately. First, we're going to compare. Now I want to make it clear. What are our sources? We have two mishnayot, right? One says dinu dvarim works, and one says it doesn't, because you can say, right? And then we have this braita. Okay, what was the braita? Where lakach min ha'ish v'chazar v'lakach min ha'isha mekho batel. Remember that? Because she can say nachar ruach hasiti l'baali. So now, what are we going to say here? That was the wrong one. I just quoted. Sorry about that. Sorry. It's three sources. It's two Mishnayot and the Braita where Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda are arguing. So the first thing we're going to do is to compare the Braita of Rabbi Meir, right, where she writes to the first one, doesn't sign off on it. Then the second one, she signs off on it, right? What does Rabbi Meir say? She loses her ketubah. We're going to compare that to the Mishnah in Gittin, right? Because look, if you look at the chart, Rabbi Meir sides with our Mishnah, right? And the Mishnah in Gittin says, "Lakach min ha'ish v'chazar v'lakach min ha'isha." She could, right? She could claim nachar ruach hasiti to the Baali. So why would Rabbi Meir say that we don't say nachar ruach hasiti to the Baali in the case of the Braita where he quoted it, but he would say it in the Mishnah in Gittin? That's basically what we're going to say. All of this goes according to Rabbi Meir, but ad kan lo kama Rabbi Meir hatam ela b'shnei lekuchot. De amrela iita de nachat ruach avda lekama ibayalach lemeabad aval belokech achad afilu Rabbi Meir mode. What's the difference? If you noticed when I read the braita, what's in the braita? First, the husband sells property to one guy and she doesn't sign off on it. Then he sells to a second guy and she signs off on it. Now, if she was just trying to make her husband happy, what would you think? Every time he's trying to sell a piece of property, she's going to sign off on it. So therefore, it must be that she wasn't just trying to make her husband happy, because then she'd always try to make her husband happy. Now, again, you could argue with this because you could say maybe the first guy was willing to buy it anyway, right? He didn't need the encouragement of the wife to say, I'm not going to demand this from you. But still, there's logic to be said that if that's her approach, she should have done it to both men. This is similar to when we saw the guy gave a ketubah and he gave a different one to each wife, and then we say, well, does that mean he intended also for her? What were his intents? Would he distinguish? So that's the approach here. Then when Rabbi Meir said, we accept the right, ibda ketubata, we accept that she meant, I really will not demand this from you, is only when there was a case where there was another guy where she did accept his claim, right? And she didn't say, I'm sorry, where she didn't say, I'm giving in to you, right? In which case, we can assume that she wasn't just doing it to appease her husband, and she really had a good reason. She really didn't want that lamb for whatever reason. In which case, she loses her ketubah. But in the Mishnah Gittin, where lakach min ha'ish, one plot of land, and then chazar v'lakach min ha'isha, and then that same buyer went and had the woman sign off on it, that doesn't work. Because then she can still claim nachar ruach hasiti l'baali. What's the problem here, though? What are we trying to say? Our Mishnah, right, the Rabbi Meir would say, if there were two lekuchot, then her claim would be solid, right? In other words, her giving up her land would actually work. But our Mishnah, what's our Mishnah? She just says to one lokach, dinu dvarim ein liimcha. And she doesn't say, there's no two lekuchot. So this approach has to say, okay, we're going to read it inside now, umatnitin, and our mission is, dekatav leila achir, that there was another buyer beforehand. Okay, that they didn't tell us, because, and then the Mefarshim say, why didn't they bother telling us that there was another lekuchot? They say, because that wasn't our issue. Our focus on the Mishnah was this particular field. We don't care that there was another field before, but for the case of showing why do we care that, you know, why do we not have her claim here? I was just doing Nachat Ruach. It's because, by the way, it happened to be that before this happened, there was a different field he sold and she didn't say that to him. Okay, she didn't say to the buyer, I'm not going to take your field from you. So therefore, she can't claim Nachat Ruach Hasiti Lebaali. Okay, you follow? So each of these interpretations has a tremendous weakness, right? To say it's a grusha is already like, you know, what are you talking about? To say that our Mishnah has some part that preceded it, also difficult. It might actually be simpler to go with the first approach, to say the Rebbe brought one Mishnah like him and one Mishnah like him, even though the Gemara doesn't really want to say that. Okay, now we have another question. Tnan Hatam. And, oh, before we get there, okay. Tnan Hatam. So there's a Mishnah that says, Ein Ifraim, this is what we learned already, but now we're going to see there's a Mishnah that says it. Ein Ifraim in Nechasim Meshuabadim, Bimkom Sheyesh Nechasim B'nei Chorin, Va'afilu Hein Ziburit. Remember we learned that a Baal Chov can demand from the Beinonit. But now we're going to learn that even as long as there's some Nechasim B'nei Chorin, even if they're Ziburit, they're the poorest land there is, right? There's Idit, the best, Benonit, the middle, and the Ziburit. Even if the Nechasim B'nei Chorin, even if the second field is a Ziburit field, as long as there's the value of what he's owed, the Nechasim Meshuabadim, you can't touch, right? Those first ones, in other words, the first field can't be touched if there's a second field, basically. Okay, that we learned. But now they're going to ask a question on this. Ibai lehu, ish teduf b'nei chare, ma'u delitrof mi mishabdei. What does this mean? What if the b'nei chorin sadeh went down in value? Okay, let's try to make it simple. We have two fields, okay? There's a chob of 100, okay? This field is worth 100 and this field is worth 100. So, they sell the first field, right? Now, what do we say? You know, this field is sold, right? Let's put a big sold sign on it. And now, right, this guy has his field. No one can collect from it because there's another field of 100. But what if the 100 goes down in value to 90? Okay? Now, can you collect part of this field? Okay? 10's worth, you know, 10 worth of the sold field or not? Okay? So, we're going to bring all sorts of attempts to show whether you can or not, okay? And in the end, the conclusion is going to go against all the they're going to bring proofs, reject them, but in the end, they're going to say, like all the proofs, like all the original intention was. Tashma, let's learn from here. Katav larishon velo chatmalo, this we saw before, right? She writes to the first guy, the husband writes to the first guy, but the wife doesn't sign on it. Lasheni vechatmalo, right? This is that braita, okay? With Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda. Ibda ktubata divrei Rabbi Meir. Okay, she loses her ktuba. V'isal kadatach ish teduf b'nei chare taref mimishabdei nihidi ibda ktubata misheni mirishon miatigbe. Right? This is very similar. It's not the same thing, but it's very similar because now it's as if this 100 field is worth zero because she can't collect from it. So now we should be allowed to collect from the 100. If you would say if it goes down in value, we can collect from the first field, then likewise, if you can't collect from the second field for some other reason, like she canceled it, right? Then you should be allowed to collect, you should be allowed to go, and it's if you'd be allowed to collect from the first field, then in this case, Rabbi Meir would say she didn't lose her ketubah, right? And Rabbi Meir says she loses her ketubah, which seems to imply you can't collect from the first field no matter what. Okay? Right. They're going to reject this. Amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak. Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak is going to reject it for a strange reason. What does he say? My ibda. Don't think the way we learned it, that ibda ketubah, she can't collect her ketubah. Ibda misheni. It means that she lost her rights to collect it from the second field, but actually, she can collect it from the first field, okay? Which is totally against the way we read this. And we're going to see that Rava immediately jumps on him and says, what are you talking about? That's clearly not what Rabbi Meir meant. Amar Rava, shtei tshuvot b'davar. This is exactly what we saw, I think, yesterday. The same lashon, right? I have two problems with what you're saying. Chada di'ibda legamre mashma. When you say she lost her ketubah, lost means she lost it entirely. It doesn't mean she lost it from the second field, but she can demand it from the first field. Ve'od, Tanya, and also we have a braita that says, Lava mina echad, Umachar nechasav l'shnayim. Okay? This sounds complicated, but this is exactly like the first case we had. He borrows from someone, and then the guy sold his two fields, right? He sold two fields to two different people. V'katav ba'alchov l'lokech sheini dinu dvarim ein li'imcha. Right? And the Baal Chov said, I'm not going to accept from the second piece. This is exactly the same case as the ketubah, right? It's that the guy had two fields. He sold one. The second one, she said, Dinu Dvarim Ein Li'imcha. It's the exact same thing. So he had a loan out, right, of 100. The first guy, the property got, he sold the first to somebody. Then he sold the second to somebody. Now, what happens? And he says to the Lokech Sheni, Dinu Dvarim Ein Li'imcha, exactly this. Ein lo alokech rishon klum. Okay, it says it explicitly. Okay, so you can't say ibda meant he loses rights to the second field. No, according to the Braita, he loses rights to the first field also. Mipnei she'achol lomar hinachti lecha makom likvot himenu. Because the first buyer could say, but I left you a field. You ruined your chances of collecting it from there. But I, you know, when I bought this field, you had from what to collect. It's your fault. So now, what do they say here? Hatam iu de'afsid nafshe biyadayim. Okay, so what does that mean? They're saying you can't compare these two cases of the ketubah of the woman to the case of the property going down in value. Why? Because she herself caused the problem. Okay, I saw you already from the beginning thinking like, how are we comparing this? This isn't the same as the property going down in value. She ruined her chances. She actively messed herself up. Okay, same thing with the guy here, right? The Baal Chov of the Loven. He also messed himself up, right? He said, I will have nothing to do with this. Okay? And therefore, you can't compare the cases, basically. Okay? So in the end, what we tried to do is to bring a source to show that if it goes down in value, you can't take from the first field, just like the woman. But then we say, no, the woman can't take from the first field because she messed herself up. Likewise, the Loven, right? But that can't teach us anything about it devaluing. Okay. So now, Rav Yemar is going to say to Rav Ashi, I don't even understand this question. I'm going to say Rav Yemar to Rav Ashi. V'ha ma'asim b'chol yom. Okay? This happens all the time. That people demand, okay, that if the property goes down in value, they take it from the first property. This does happen all the time. Why are you even asking this question? How do we know it happens all the time? Now, again, I'll just set it up for you, right? So, again, we had a question. We had a possible answer from Rav Nachman that you can't compare. We rejected him because he said, you know, Ibda doesn't mean Ibda Lagamra. Then, right, we brought a second possible answer. But then we said, no, you can't compare. You can't learn it from the Ketubah case because that's not the same. That's where she caused her problem, right? Now we're going to say, again, there's no reason for this question because we have another case that's going to show. And in the end, what are we going to say? Again, that case is different. Dahu gavra de mishkan le pardisa lechavre le etzer shnin. A guy gave a field. Okay, someone owed money to someone else. He didn't have the money to pay it back. He said, but I have a pardes. I'll give you my pardes, my orchard. I'll give it to you for 10 years. You can get all the produce for 10 years, and that will pay back what I owe you. Bikash lechamesh shanin. But after 5 years, it already wasn't giving fruit anymore. Okay, the pardes ran out of fruit. It wasn't doing well. And now the guy doesn't have money. Now, obviously, what happened here, we didn't tell you this, but obviously there was a, right, let's put it on our thing here. The second property was a pardes. The first property was a sadeh that he sold, right? So now, here's a pardes. Let's say it was worth 100. Now it's worth 50, right? It's only worth half because it only got the 5 years worth and not the full 10. So, atza lekameu derabanan, v'katvu le'tirfa, and they wrote him a star that he could now go demand the first field from the lokech. So what do you see here? Exactly what the question was. If the second field goes down in value, obviously you can collect from the Nechasim Meshua Badi. So they say no. Ha tamnami inuhu de afsidu anafshayu. Kevan de habuyade de pardisa avidikish. Everyone knows that a pardes goes down in value and doesn't, in other words, a pardes is not something that's sustainable for the long term. And therefore, now, here it's different. It's not the guy, that's who's mafsid nafshayu. The guy who bought the first field didn't think about it properly. He should have realized that the second property was a pardes and therefore was going to go to devalue over time. There would be depreciation.
Think of that. He thinks it's his problem.
No, it is. Why is it his his fault, because whenever you go to buy land, you check, does this guy have any outstanding chovot? And then you know...
But maybe the chovah was after he bought it. No.
If the chovah is after he bought it, then the chasim are mishuabadim. Okay. Right. We've learned this, right?
Oh, right.
It's only mishuabad from... Right? Yes. If you bought this land after he had the chov, the obligation, right?
So you're saying...
So let's say they got married in 2000. Let's say it's a case of ketubah. They got married in the year 2000. He sold this property in the year 2005. In 2005, he also had this pardes. So the buyer in 2005 comes and says, look, I will buy this land, okay, because I know that you're not going to take the ketubah money from me because you have a pardes. But, okay, in this case, it actually wasn't a ketubah, but let's just say. So now they're saying the guy who in 2005 who went and bought this property wasn't thinking it fully well because he should have known the pardes is going to go down in value, and even though it's worth this now, it won't be worth this enough later, okay, to cover the costs. And therefore, it's his fault. So loi ba'ale lemizban. In other words, he shouldn't have bought it. Okay. So now, in the end, we don't have any conclusive evidence for the fact that what? That if the property goes down in value, now you'd have to say in an unexpected way, right? If it's an expected way, clearly you'd be able to collect from the nechassim from the first field because the guy should have known. But if it's unexpected loss, like, you know, some terrible drought happens and it ruins the land and, you know, I don't know what, something unexpected, then, right, we don't have any conclusive evidence that would say you can collect. However, the Gemara now tells us, v'hilchata, okay? It happens to be, despite the fact that we can't prove it here, the Gemara says the halacha is that if the property that's b'nei chorin, the second field, goes down in value, you are allowed to collect it from the first. So now we're learning that you do have to be careful when you buy a field, even if there's nechasim b'nei chorin, you know, there's still a bit of a risk involved. It's much less of a risk, but there is a bit of a risk. Amar Baye. If somebody writes his property to somebody, okay, to a woman, and then he says, and after you die, it will go to someone else, okay, let's say it'll go to the guy's brother, I don't know, you know, he says, right now it'll be yours, but in the event that you die, it's going to go to someone else. Ve'amda v'niset, and then she gets married to somebody, okay, at the time she wasn't married, she gets married to someone, and then she dies. The property, remember, the man inherits the woman's property. Because he inherits it now, if the woman were to stay alive, then it would never go to the other guy. So now, or if she were to sell it to somebody else, it also wouldn't go to the other guy. So now, if she gets married, that is as if the husband has bought it off of her, and therefore it doesn't ever go to the third guy. So now they say, Kiman, who is this like? Ki hai tana de tanya, like the tana it's quoted in this braita, nechase laich lech ulacharayach leploni. Okay, if someone were to say exactly the same thing, the money goes to you, and afterwards it'll go to someone else. Yarad harishon umachar. Okay, if the first guy sold it, hasheni motzi miyad halekuchot. Divrei Rebbe. Rebbe holds different from this. Okay, this he's not the opinion we're gonna see. The second one can take it from the lekach, okay? In other words, if you said it's going to go to me, and after my death it's going to go to Shoshana, so if I sold it to Ruth, then Shoshana could demand it from Ruth, because it was supposed to go to her. That's what Rebbe says. Rashba gomer, ein l'sheni ela mashashia rishon. That Shoshana only gets whatever I have left over when I'm dead, okay? But if I sold it, then she doesn't get it. So obviously, this goes like Rashba. So now we say, Mi amar Abaye hacha? Could Abaye, right? Abaye was the first one who said this halacha, that, you know, the Baal is like the lokeach, and therefore, ein acharayach b'mkom Baal klum. Umi amar Abaye hachi? V'ha amar Abaye, ezehu rasha arom? Okay, what's a naked rasha? Okay, it's a weird phrase. Ze hamesi etza linkor b'nechasim ki rashbag. Someone who tells someone, in other words, what's a really evil guy? It's someone who tells someone, okay, if someone were in this situation, right, like my property was written, right, it was written, given to me as a gift, but when I die to Shoshana, they would tell me, Michelle, be smart, sell it to Ruth so that you get the money and it doesn't end up going to Shoshana. That's, in other words, someone who tells, recommends to me to do that is a Rasha Eirom. So therefore, how could Abaye also say that we hold that way, right? So they say, mi ka amar tina se, ni seit ka amar. Nobody ever said they recommended to her to marry this guy, okay? It just happened she got married. It's not like she was getting married to avoid giving the property to someone. She got married because that's a normal way of living, to go get married to someone. So, it's, in other words, there's nothing wrong with getting married. Abaye says, if you happen to be married, well, then the Baal is like a lokeach, and then he gets the property. It doesn't go to the third person. But it's not like he was saying, you should recommend to women to do this in order to keep the property in their hands. But okay. Amar Abaye, Nichasai lach ulacharayach leploni umachra, and then she sold it, umeta, and then she dies, haba'al motzi miyad halekuchot. Her husband can demand it back from the lekuchot. Why? Because remember, her property, when she dies, belongs to her husband. So he can take it away from the lekuchot. So if she sells property, what they're basically saying here is she doesn't have full rights to sell her property because the husband has rights to it after her death. V'acharayich miya ba'al, and then once the ba'al has it, right, once he takes it from the lekuchot, the acharayich could take it from the husband's hands. V'lokeach miyad acharayich, and then the lokeach can take it from the other guy, because he could say, the ba'al claimed the land, I want back from you. U'mukmina lekulu biyada de lokeach. And then in the end, what do we say? The lokeach ends up with the property. Okay? So let's go through this again. She had property, right? She sold it in her lifetime. Then she dies. Her husband claims it from the lokeach. But then the acharayich, right, the person who was supposed to get it, Shoshana in our case, would demand it from the husband. And then the husband, then the lokeach, can demand it from Shoshana. So now, what do they say? So the lokeach gets it, okay? So now they say, what do you mean? Here it seems everybody has equal rights to it. So why don't you say we make a pshara like we did in the Mishnah? Right? Because this could go on forever. And yet they say, they give it to the lokeach. So what do they answer? This is a different case. Hatam iluhu pseida lekulhu. Hacha lokeachu di'it le pseida. In the end, what was this property? This was property that was given to the wife as a gift. Right? Because it says, this is to you, and after you, so-and-so will get it. So the wife, the husband, and the third guy were all people who were just getting this as a gift. Whereas the little calf was the only one who actually put out money for this. So he's the only one who's losing out financially on this. And therefore, he's the one who wins in this case. Whereas in our Mishnah, nobody lost out financially. I'm sorry, everybody was losing financially. Sorry. Everybody was losing, right? The woman wanted her ketubah. The other woman wanted her ketubah. The guy bought the field. Everybody was out for money. And that's why in the end they have to do a pshara. It's a very interesting theory, right? It's saying, because in theory, so what if you got it as a gift or not? You all have equal rights to it. But in the end, they're taking into consideration financial loss of people. And therefore, the guy who has the financial loss, he's the one who's going to win out. Adal Rafarim, Amar Lishmati Kamedu Rav Ashi. And he says, so Rav Aram brings this law in front of Rav Ashi, and he says, Mi amar Abaye haha. V'ha amar Abaye, there's a big problem with this statement of Abaye. I don't know if you caught this, but what did Abaye say? Nichsai lach l'acharayach l'ploni, amdavani say, ba'al lokeach havi, ve'ein l'acharayach b'mkom ba'al klum. And in this case, what did Abaye say? That the acharayach can claim it from the husband. Didn't Abaye himself say, after, right, if the husband has it, he's a lokeach, ein acharay ba'al klum. So amar lei, Hatam da amrla kashehi pnuya. Hacha da amrla kashehi nisua. If the our first case when Abaye said it was when she wasn't married, and then if she goes and gets married after that, then and that's what happened. The guy says, "I'm giving this to you." Okay, let's say it was the case we saw before. They're giving me land, and they say, "And after you die, it's going to go to Shoshana." Now I wasn't married at the time. If I get married, that's as if I sold it to somebody else, and it's then their property. But, and it was as if, you know, I, but
sold
if,
it or gave it?
Well, it's, so they say ba'al lokeach. It's as if it was sold, even though I gave it. But if I was married at the time, then he knew that my husband was going to inherit it from me. But yet he said, I want to give this to you, Michelle, as a gift, and only to you. And when you die, it's going to Shoshana, right? I had a husband at the time, so he was bypassing the husband, basically. In that case, it would go to Shoshana. So that's why the second case we saw with Abaye, where the acharayach had a claim, they had a claim because I was married at the time, and therefore it was clear that whoever gave the gift knew I was married, was intending to bypass the husband, and that's why they had a claim to it. My ka'amrala, what was he saying to her? Acharayach likne ba'al lo likne. Okay, he was saying, Shoshana is going to have a claim and not your husband to it. Okay, so that's where we make a distinction. Last line, the chaim ba'al chov. Okay, the same with the ba'al chov. You remember the Mishnah about the roundabout, right? She gets it from him, they get it from him, right? In the end, they have to do a pshara. V'chein ba'al chov, v'chein ba'alat chov, az tana v'chein ba'al chov u'shnei l'kuchot, v'chein isha ba'alat chov u'shnei l'kuchot. In other words, this is really just simple and obvious. It's the same thing if there's a ba'al chov with two people who bought fields. Okay, the same thing that. And the same with the isha ba'alat chov. It's actually interesting. I'm sure the Mefreshim talk about this. I didn't notice, but why they would specifically mention a woman ba'al chov, why would there think to be a distinction? I don't know the answer to that question. There must be a reason. Okay, we'll leave it at that. Because normally, right, they just mention men. They don't necessarily think about mentioning the woman as an addition, right? Usually it would just be included, obviously, the ba'al chov. I don't know. So you could look there and see.
Position because if she marries someone.
Right, maybe because it's connected to the property. But I don't know if that would be relevant. I'm going to look at Rashi for a second. But that was the case already, the ketubah case. That was the basic case of the Mishnah. So why would you say... I don't know why there would be a different the case in the Mishnah, the basic case was about a ketubah.
Right, but it's the same case they're saying.
Right, then that really wouldn't make any sense.
This case
so.
Is essentially the same as the previous one.
Uh-huh.
A woman husband sells two fields, two people divide two fields with paper ketubah, the woman collects part of the ketubah from the first part of the collects the guarantee from the second field, of which the second part takes it back from the woman. And it goes in that, and the whole
I see. Here's a woman
itself.
Who's trying to take a ketubah from one guy who sold two fields, whereas our Mishnah was two wives. I see. In other words, it would be the same with one wife and two fields as opposed to two wives and one field. You know, right. Okay, fine. You could, yeah. Okay, I guess that's what it means here, right? That's what they're trying to add. Okay. So, Hajanach Mishayana Soy, and starting a new Mishnah.
Are stifling, discouraging. Trade and commerce, because we try in our law, we try to make it easy for people to transact. But if there are all these contingencies that you might lose your land,
right, then people aren't going to want to sell their land.
There's a huge onus on the buyer to have done an offer.
Yes, the buyer really does have to do research.
Unanticipated situation.
Yes, where the land might devalue, and
but he would know because he's buying a field that vineyards devalue. Like,
right. On the other hand, what are they trying to do? We saw this before. They're trying to protect in the wife's case, the ketubah, that she should be able to demand her ketubah. And the Baal Chov, why? Because they don't want people to say, I'm not going to lend money because I won't get my money back. In other words, this is the same thing with Pruzbal, right? In other words, we want it right. There was a whole thing about Nilat Delet Bifnei Lovim. In other words, we don't want to shut the door that people won't lend money. So we want to make it very easy for them to get their money back, to allow a society where people are... It's the same thing. It's the same thing with buying land and it goes back in the Yovil year. It's all... Right?
Right.
You know, what do you mean you're buying land and it's all... But again, you have to remember that their buying land is not like our buying land, because they're buying land, they know that this property is going to go back in the Yovil. Or they know... So they buy it, the price is based on that. Same thing here. They're going to get it for less money because there's a lien on the property. And it's a risk.
Right.
So it's true. It's miserable because you're like at risk here. Is someone going to take my land tomorrow? You never really know. However, it ultimately prevents people from, saying, I don't want to lend people money. So that's the...
This is like 39-year leases.
I was actually going to say that, yes. There's all this property in Israel that's like that, where
even
there's 49-year leases.
Manhattan
also? Interesting. Yeah. So here, there's all this, I think it's church property, and the church property, there's like certain different properties were owned by different people in this country, and I remember in Jerusalem, a lot of the property was like that, where there's these 49-year leases, or there's... I don't remember all the details, but it's how it works legally.
Converted into a hotel, and the lease was coming up, and you assume that it's going to go through, but you have a hotel. Like,
right.
What if the person
what
just
if they
doesn't
just say,
wanna, then
right.
Where are you?
Right, you're stuck.